Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. Visit speakuptalkradio.com. And today, I have a very special guest with a topic that often gets overlooked and avoided. So I am pleased to have this honest and candid conversation with Linda Naomi Baron Katz. Born on March 21st, 1969, by the name of Linda Naomi Baron, raised as a modern Orthodox Jew, where mental illness became a factor throughout her life. It started with her mother when she was in the fifth grade. Her mother had suffered a nervous breakdown and was diagnosed with acute depression. And this gave Linda and her family a huge amount of stress. And as she was growing up into adulthood, her mother's illness affected her in ways that she too would become a depressed person. Linda had difficulties making friends, developing positive relationships, and maintaining employment. And after she graduated from college, she also suffered from a mental illness and was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. Through the years, she was faced with challenges that were difficult to overcome, but worked hard to achieve recovery. And as part of her recovery from mental illness, she became active and volunteered for a variety of mental health organizations. Linda became a member of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, formerly called the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, and she published articles about her life in New York City Voices, a newspaper for people with mental illness to share their personal recovery stories. Both of these agencies helped fight against the stigma and other issues pertaining to mental illness. Soon after, Linda found employment working for agencies that help others with mental illness for them to reach their goals and dreams. And today, she is happily married, an author who has published two books. One is titled Surviving Mental Illness, My Story, which won a Silver Medal Award by Reader's Favorite for Best Nonfiction Autobiography and came in first place and won the Life Journeys Award for Best Memoir Biography from Reader's Views. The second book, titled Peter and Lisa, A Mental Illness Children's Story, which she co-authored with her husband, Charles Katz. It's about two adults who struggle with mental illness and get better with medication and the necessary support by family and friends. Linda wrote these two books to show that mental illness is not something to be afraid of and that anyone can overcome life's challenges and achieve a happy life. And she's with us right now to share her journey, her books, and her wisdom. So welcome to the show, Linda.
Thank you.
Oh, what a pleasure. I want to start out by saying congratulations and thank you. It's a brave and positive thing to write a book for the entire world to read that shares you and your story so honestly. So my heartfelt thank you goes out to you.
You're welcome.
Well, now, before we begin with your story, let's just help with a few groundwork questions for those who may not have any experience with this whatsoever. What do you define as mental illness?
I believe mental illness is some sort of chemical imbalance in the brain by some neurotransmitters mixed up. It's like you have a bunch of screws. They were all together, and now they're mixed up, and they need to be controlled or tightened to get better. So sometimes these bunch of screws or neurotransmitters get so mixed up, out of whack, that they don't let you think properly. They make you lose judgment, can't make decisions properly, they make you more sad or more depressed, or maybe too talkative or too happy, jittery, as in my case. So, and it's mental illness is a variety of, comes from a couple of factors. It can be genetic, hereditary, brought in some type of psychological trauma. It could be due to environmental, depending on your environment. With mental illness, it's not curable, But like I said, it can be manageable. It can be controlled.
And so, you know, as you're saying this, you're thinking about this collection of screws that go haywire. That's not anything that's in a person's control, much like when a cell goes awry or the DNA gets damaged and a person gets cancer. So why is there still such a stigma, or is there?
I think it's a stigma more because there are people that are afraid of it or have some type of fear of the unknown of it. But I feel that the more you educate the public about it, the less stigma there will be. And a lot of people are just not ready to open up. Mm-hmm. And because of the stigma, some people, because of the stigma, can't even admit they're mentally ill.
Right.
They fight it hard. They do whatever they can to avoid the truth. Mm-hmm. And that's not good either. I think stigma is people are afraid of it. You know, they're used to seeing, like, people with mental illness, they think they're crazy, or they think it's the worst thing that can ever happen in a person's life. Or they say, well, I was always the stronger person. My sister was with the weaker person. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, it's very, very hard for people to admit. And that stigma is the reason.
Right. No, I understand it to a point, and I'm glad that you mentioned the words educate, that people need to be educated, because that's what you do through your book. So why did you feel compelled to share your story with the world? Because of that?
Yes, and because I did it for two reasons, not just to educate the public, but I also did it for selfish reasons. Because I didn't have any children. I was unable to have children. And I wanted to leave a legacy. I wanted to be remembered. And I felt that writing a book, becoming an author, was the best way. If I couldn't have children to remember me, maybe the world can remember me. That was at the time when I was writing it, that's how I felt. But I also felt that it was important to educate the public. I feel that if I can share my story with one person who's going through a hard time, would like to have that same kind of hope that my family gave me, you know, I felt that I contributed to society.
Well, I think you did, and I agree with you. If just one person is helped by your book, you've done quite a good job. Now, in your book, you say that there are three type of mood disorders, depression, bipolar, and schizophrenia, and you were diagnosed with one of those. Let's just talk about that for a moment.
I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, manic depressive, and it came at a time, the 2 years I graduated from college, and I was in the middle of looking for a job, trying to get work, was unsuccessful, didn't know whether this field was right for me or not, and, you know, the fact that I had a hard time getting a job or succeeding in the business world, it really brought me down, and I became really depressed. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, one day, I started waking up at a crazy hour, and I was doing things that I myself would never do. I got so manic that I was so euphoric, that I was so out of touch with reality. I not only was euphoric in the mania, but I also had some psychotic symptoms. Mm-hmm. So I heard voices. I heard voices of a man that I used to be infatuated over in college. And I'm talking very obsessed over.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to hear his voice all the time in my head. And I used to think that he and I were going to get engaged. One time I even thought I was like a prophet or someone special because I heard people praying to me outside my window. And, you know, I had also done a lot of shopping sprees. So, all this combined, my father knew what I was experiencing because he experienced it with my mother. So, he took me to my mother's psychiatrist, who wasn't willing at first to treat me, but then my father begged him, so he decided to treat me, and he diagnosed me with bipolar disorder. And I started taking medications like Prolixin. Prolixin is like a miracle drug on my family. My mother used it, and so I used it, and it was working very well for a time up until I needed extra medications because Prolixin alone was not working as well as it should have. So my doctor wanted to put me on lithium, and I was against on lithium for a while. I did not want to be on that medicine because of the side effects and everything, but he told me to at least try it. So I did. I had to spend 2 weeks in the hospital to have that medicine injected to me. I mean, not injected, so they could measure my blood levels. And I hated my time in the hospital. I hated it. I couldn't stand being away from my family. I couldn't stand being with strangers I didn't know. But one thing I got out of the program that I liked were the group sessions. And the groups were fantastic. I learned a lot about myself through the groups. So, but eventually lithium did not work very well for me, so I had to be switched to Depakote. And Depakote I was on for a number of years until I got married and decided to try to get pregnant. Mm-hmm. So.
And your husband, you say, also experiences some degree of mental illness.
In the beginning, my husband was diagnosed with depression, but now it's also bipolar. But I don't think he had the same bipolar like I had. So his bipolar was quite different.
Mm-hmm. Right. Different. So there's different.
Go ahead. I searched very hard to find a boyfriend. At first, you know, I didn't want a guy with a mental illness because I said I had enough of it with my family. Why am I going to bring another person? But it was a difficult time, and I decided, my therapist said, you know, Linda, maybe dating someone with a mental illness is not going to be so bad for you. Mm-hmm. They're understanding, they'll be supportive because you're going through a similar type of situation. So I got involved with NAMI's Friendship Network, and that's a socialization program. And they help you make friends with people with mental illness, socialize with them. And I kind of liked that for a while. Mm-hmm. and they matched me up with certain people who were of my Jewish religious values. So, but it gave me the confidence to really succeed. And I later left the Friendship Network because it wasn't a religious community, like. And I decided, you know, the best way I'm going to be able to meet someone in my Orthodox Jewish community is to educate them about mental illness. And that's what I did. And eventually I met my husband and realized he also had a mental illness, and I started to like him, and we dated on and off for 5 years. And then when my mother got sick with cancer, I started going out seriously with him because I knew he was going to be that person for me that I can count on for the rest of my life.
Well, thank goodness you found him. And now you're writing books together, and that's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Now, you talked about your Orthodox Jewish religion. How did that help or hinder your recovery?
Well, as I said, when I was single, it really was a hinder with my recovery because men used to run away from me the moment they heard I had bipolar. But I also think it helped because faith is really important. Believing in something spiritual is important. So religion and spirituality have always been the main thing that kept me growing, that kept me endured. And that is one thing. So when I started to educate the Orthodox Jewish community, I had this one event at Chavurat Yisrael where I had a theme for stigma, dealing with stigma with mentally ill. Dealing with stigma against the mentally ill. And about 45 people came to the event. I had the Jewish Week write an article about the event. And it was the first that an Orthodox Jew ever did something like that. And the rabbi was so supportive. You know, it was just a great turnout. And I got speakers from an organization called Community Access. That's an organization that helps the psychiatric disabled, people with mental health disorders, work on their vocational, their educational skills, and housing, help people with housing and everything. So, you know, and it was great. And now I tried to do a few more events like that. And but it's very hard because the Orthodox Jewish community is very tight-knit.
Yes.
And very stuck up. And it's very hard. A lot of people choose to keep quiet. I even had done an Orthodox Jewish peer support group. And even the peers, they didn't want to do it in a shul because, well, they're afraid to come out. Mm-hmm. It, you know, it's still very, very hard for people in the Orthodox Jewish community with mental illness to come out in the open, even amongst their own.
Right. And that's why I asked that question, because as I was thinking about it, I figured, well, there's definitely aspects, I'm sure, to your religion that really helped you. And I was kind of guessing that there were that some that worked against you or not in your favor. I also want to talk about your time of infertility and your hopes for adoption, because that had to have been a really difficult time for you as well.
It was very hard. I had trouble and it was very hard for me at the time. And I finally, through intrauterine insemination, I finally got pregnant. And the pregnancy was very hard. You would think my father would be happy for me, would be gracious to me during my pregnancy, but he wasn't. He was a worrier. He was controlling the situation. He gave me one of the worst depressions that I ever had. And everybody told me, Linda, you cannot get this depressed. This will hurt the fetus. Well, to this day, I have doubts whether the depression that I had during the pregnancy did hurt the fetus, because eventually I did an amniocentesis, and they learned that the fetus was not growing. There was not enough amniotic fluid, and they were afraid that the fetus, I could miscarry, that the fetus could end up stillborn, that there would be too many complications. And so I didn't know what to do, so I realized that I came to a decision to terminate the pregnancy, and that was really traumatic for me.
Yes.
And really hard for me to do that. Wow. In fact, to this day, I guess I have some doubts and regret that I did that. Maybe I should have waited until I miscarried, then it would really be God's decision. But I think we all knew that the fetus was not going to survive.
Right. And you made the best decision that you could at the time with the information that you had. So to look back and regret, you know,
yes,
that's just a harmful way for you to react, I would imagine.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And so after that pregnancy, I decided to try to get pregnant again. I did a couple of IVFs and everything. And it was every time it failed, procedure failed, it gave me a toll on my mental health. And I knew that wasn't good. And when I was 40, I said, this is going to be the last one. And if it doesn't work out, I'll think of adoption. And as well, it did not work out. And I thought of adoption, but I realized that adoption was not for me. Even foster care I thought of, but I even took some parenting classes. Me and my husband took parenting classes to see if we could do foster care. But somehow it just didn't work out. And so I decided, Charles, maybe it's time. Maybe we shouldn't have children. Maybe we're not meant to have children. We decided to live child-free. Surprisingly, I was content at that decision. I must tell you, coming to terms with it made me feel relaxed, made me feel content, made me feel better. Because it was so much stress and everything. You know, you can imagine the stress that's being built up. You know, saying goodbye to never being a parent is very hard. But I was glad I came to that decision and then realized now I can focus on my career. Mm-hmm. Now I can focus on doing things that I love. So today I'm working as a certified peer specialist. I'm getting that certification and I'm very happy about that. And I continue with my volunteer work with NAMI and everything. So, in fact, we just had NAMI Queens Nassau had just an event this past Wednesday on the clergy's role in psychiatric hospitals. And it was a well-planned event. People liked it. The audience liked it. I became the chairperson of the NAMI Queens Nassau Interfaith Committee.
Oh,
so,
congratulations.
It was a successful event, and I'm glad it worked out. And I like being involved. Mm-hmm. I like being involved in these things.
Well, you should be involved because you have experience, you have a voice, and you have a positive message to give folks. So you are an important piece of this whole puzzle here for other people that are experiencing this and don't know where to turn or what to do. So you are an important person, and your role is exactly what it should be. Yeah. Now, you and your husband, you wrote a book for children.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about that.
It's called Peter and Lisa, A Mental Illness Children's Story. It is about two people, Peter and Lisa, who really like each other but struggle with their own mental illnesses, and particularly depression and mania. Lisa suffering from mania and Peter suffering from depression. And they both struggle with it, and their friend Trudy helps them a bit and with their family. Lisa has a 7-year-old daughter named Nancy, and Trudy helps take care of Nancy while Lisa goes for help in a psychiatric hospital, and Peter helps lends her hands, giving her comfort, saying she'll pull out of this. And they get recovered, and they get better with medication. And the fact that having friends and family around was their motivation for support. And I think it's a really good book for children, for parents to read it to their children. It's written in a child's language so that a child can understand. Like they would not understand what a psychiatrist is, but they understand when the doctor treats people who are sick in the head.
Right.
So.
Right. Yes, this is a good book for children to get an understanding of what Peter and Lisa are going through, kind of from that child's viewpoint. So, and you talked about they finally do recover, and you end your other book, Surviving Mental Illness, you end that book by asking the question, what does recovery mean to you? And I thought that's a very important question because that answer is going to be different for every person.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, now, where can listeners go to learn more about you and to purchase your books?
They can go on Amazon, barnesandnoble.com, and they can go to my website, Surviving, surviving-mental-illness.com.
Okay, so that's surviving-mental-illness.com so that they could learn more about you and to get copies of your books. Now, before we wrap up, is there anything else that you'd like to talk about that we missed today? Or any final words of advice?
Well, I say never give up hope, and recovery is the most important thing you can do in your life, and try working on your goals and your dreams and focus on them and take your medications, exercise, eat healthy, and just do your best that you can, because that's all anybody asks of you. No matter whether you are volunteering or working full-time or part-time, just do something productive with your life. That's what recovery is all about.
Those are huge words, Linda. And as I said at the beginning of the program, I'm so proud of you for having, and I'm going to use a good Jewish word, chutzpah, to put your life in words for the rest of the world to learn from. So I really thank you today. I'm so happy that I met you and that I had this opportunity to share you with our listeners.
Thank you.